And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. It is 3 minutes past nine, nearly 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday. It's the 8th of April. I hope you're all very well indeed, and you're very welcome along to another 9 to noon show. I'm broadcasting live with you here for the next 3 hours with the usual mix of news, views and features. And we want you involved throughout. 086 60 25,000. That is how you WhatsApp and text us. So maybe you're hearing a conversation and you want to share your view. We love to hear those views as well. Or maybe there's something happening out and about that you think we should know about. Let us know. Or maybe you just want to pass on an act of kindness or something that's happened to you that's positive. We want all of your contributions. 086 60 25,000. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25,000. And emailers, you go to comments@highlandradio.com. And don't forget to watch the show if you want to. If you're at home or working from home or working in the home, you can watch our live stream on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. We're on Facebook and on the X platform as well. Right, obviously, if we're going to do the papers every morning, tariffs are going to be part of it now for the foreseeable, it would seem. We hope not, but anyway. What impact might it have on us? The Irish Independent suggests housing demand highly vulnerable to economic shock caused by US tariffs. Housing demand in this country is already high or is highly vulnerable to a sudden economic shock caused by the actions of Donald Trump. This is because the property market here is disproportionately reliant on high-income earners working in multinational sectors, according to the latest quarterly house price report from My Home in association with Bank of Ireland. Experts at the property portal said the threat of a trade war will influence how the housing market will perform this year. The Irish property market's disproportionate reliance on high-income earners working in multinational sectors would see it vulnerable to any sudden economic shock, the report found. However, if there is no trade war, then the housing market's record low supply levels and continued strong demand means that My Home is forecasting 5% property inflation for this year, but may prove too conservative. The author of the report, Bank of Ireland Chief Economist O'Connell McQuillia, said the threats come as national asking prices for residential property was up 8.1% over the year. So obviously this trade war is going to have its impacts. The majority of us aren't really impacted by movements in the stock exchange directly. You know, I mean, I suppose if you have a pension, you might be somewhat affected, but the majority of us don't hold stocks. And if you do, I suppose the only thing you can do is sit it out, because they go up and down and up and down, such is the nature of long-term investment. Are you missing out on supports to send your student to college? The Irish Times reports that tens of thousands of eligible third-level students in households with incomes of up to €100,000 are missing out on grants aimed at easing the cost of college education. An estimated 40,000 students from households where combined incomes are €62,000 to €100,000 are entitled to a €500 grant for college fees. Now, you may not realise that. Maybe you thought that because your combined income or your solo income was in the high tens that you weren't entitled to that €500, but perhaps you are. Latest figures show just 18,200 have availed of it so far in the 24-25 academic year. The closing date for applications is at the end of next month. The grant reduces the annual student contribution cost from €2,000 to €1,500 for eligible applicants this year. SUSE, the National Authority for Higher Education Grants, is continuing to accept applications for 24-25 until the end of May. A spokesperson for the authority said requests for late applications after this time would be reviewed on a case-by-case basis. But maybe you are in that income bracket and you could be getting a €500 grant towards college fees. Now, just because you are in that bracket doesn't necessarily mean that you have an abundance of cash either. Perhaps maybe you have high mortgage costs, you know, maybe a new car on lease or PCP or whatever it might be. So that €500 might help you. It doesn't really talk to the majority of people listening to this show, but perhaps it might you. Ukrainians entering colleges in Ireland will no longer benefit from targeted financial aid and free tuition as the government aligns support for those for Irish students. This is in the Irish Daily Mail and did aggravate It did aggravate people, not because they were anti-Ukraine or anti-refugee or anything like that there. It's because they were struggling to send their children to third level, or indeed weren't able to, whilst we had new arrivals into the country getting free college places and targeted benefits. And again, the motivation there would be that someone might feel that that is unfair, but they're levelling the playing field, apparently. The Irish Daily Mail understands the Cabinet will today sign off on plans to scrap the temporary tuition fee support scheme, which automatically entitles Ukrainians fleeing war to a €6,000 grant towards university fees. Maybe some of you are learning for the first time that this grant existed. We have referenced it on the show before. Ministers are also expected to approve changes which will exempt Ukrainians from a separate stipend worth up to $1,150 per month. Any Ukrainian students already enrolled in ongoing studies will be unaffected by the changes. New students will no longer receive the same financial aid. So if you're a Ukrainian in third level already, you continue to get these supports, but new arrivals won't. A source said Ukrainians entering Irish colleges from the next academic year will be eligible for the means-tested Student Universal Support Ireland, SUSE grant, while Ukrainians who have been living in Ireland, the European Union, the European Economic Area, or the UK for longer than 3 years can qualify for discounted tuition fees through the Free Fees Initiative. More than 1,800 Ukrainian students enrolled in further and higher education courses here in Ireland are in receipt of state support. So still some very well off, it has to be said. On to the story that many of you are following, and it is a mysterious disappearance of a farmer down the country. Sheep belonging to missing farmer Michael Gain were being sold off by his devastated wife at a Kerry Co-op Mart yesterday. The paper spent the day speaking to pals and locals about the baffling mystery of his disappearance on March 20th, as the search now goes into its third week without answers. It's understood Gardaí have committed to continuing to search for the 56-year-old, It's understood Gardaí have committed to continue to search the 56-year-old's land, which is nestled in a scenic area near Molly's Gap in Kenmare, for the rest of the week. However, sources said if officers do not find any significant evidence, the search of the land may be wound up in days. It comes as the paper spotted a drone flying above his farm yesterday, as Gardaí were assisted by members of the Defence Forces in searching the vast land, which is full of outhouses, a river, streams, forest and rough terrain. In the midst of the search, it's understood Gardaí recovered a bow and arrow in a cave located on the land, though sources have urged caution and said officers are not immediately linking the find with his disappearance. It really is a mystery, very unusual, hence the Garda effort and the media coverage. Heard it in the news, but obviously this is a story we've tracked right from the beginning, so I want to reference it at this stage as well. It's in the Sun this morning. Murdered backpacker Danielle McLaughlin's evil killer has appealed his conviction. It's emerged. Now, this was expected because his defence at the trial said they would be lodging an immediate appeal, so here it is. Vicar Bhagat, 31, is also fighting the life term he received for the Donegal native's rape and murder. Danielle, 28, who was studying to be a yoga teacher, was found dead in Goa in India in 2017. Bhagat, who was found guilty in February, has lodged his appeal with Bombay High Court. Danielle's devastated mum, Andrea Branigan, told The Sun she was made aware of the development through the media in India. She said, "I knew this was going to happen. Our legal team will be doing everything in their power to keep him in prison." So, as I say, they did know it was coming. From the world of politics, somewhat out of the blue, and we probably saw this on the news yesterday evening. It's in the Irish Daily Mirror today. People Before Profits' Richard Boyd Barrett, who's been one of the most vocal in opposition in recent years, he's announced he'll have to step back from politics for several months due to a cancer diagnosis. Speaking on RTE's Today with Claire Byrne, the Dun Laoghaire TD, 58, confirmed he'd been diagnosed with throat cancer and has to undergo radiotherapy and chemotherapy. However, he vowed yesterday on being back as soon as possible, but said his doctors have insisted he cannot work during treatment as it can be pretty rough. Mr. Boyd Barrett said, "I have to enter into a fairly intense period of cancer treatment over the next. It's going to certainly take a couple of months," which is which is a concern, no doubt about it. Okay, that was a run through some of the stories making the papers today. 086 60 25,000. Yesterday we referenced through a caller the closure of toilets in Rathmullen. There was a sign up saying that they had been closed indefinitely due to vandalism, which I think occurred over the weekend. There was a bit of aggro in and around that area. But we got on to the council, obviously, to find out what the story is from their perspective. The good news is they're going to be partially reopened today. It's a short statement, but why go into great detail when the news is positive? Following assessment of the damage caused to the toilets, the necessary repairs are ongoing and it's hoped to have the facilities at least partially open today. Okay, so a lot of people in full praise of those facilities. It's great to have them, and they will be partially reopened today. We can say good morning now to Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine, with special responsibility for fisheries, Deputy Timmy Dooley. Good morning, Minister. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg, and it's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
Indeed. You're encouraging Donegal groups to apply for funding through the recently launched Fisheries Local Action Group, the FLAG programme. People might be more familiar with it. It's the Coastal Communities Development Scheme. It's covering 4 years, 25 to 29. What kind of applications might be successful in this?
Well, we're not being prescriptive from a departmental perspective. The administration work, from our perspective, is carried out by Bord Éisc Uaire, and they support the work of the Fisheries Local Action Group, who themselves, across the coastal communities, have developed a strategy which they now want to implement. And we're providing the money in consultation with the European Union. It's a co-funded project. And it's really about allowing those communities to decide for themselves what kind of projects within broad parameters will help and assist those coastal communities in addressing many of the challenges that they face, no different to communities across the state, but coastal communities have a particular focus. We very much want to encourage, and I as Minister on behalf of the government, want to encourage a future in our coastal communities, want to show those communities that there's a future in fishing, there's a future in aquaculture, and there's a future in community life along our coast. So, as I said, the various different groups have already been in discussion. This programme has been around for over 12 years, so there were previous tranches of funding. So the kind of projects that were funded in the past, and it's not just limited to these, would be those of a social benefit from a leisure perspective in a communities, community facilities, tourism projects, commercial projects, small commercial projects where people have a good business idea. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the fishing or seafood sector, but if it's a good local idea, it has the potential to create jobs, it has the potential to create economic activity within the coastal community, well then the committee or the local action group will give due consideration and due regard to it. I met recently with Stephen McCahill up in Donegal. He's from, well, he was down in Dublin, but he's from Donegal. He's very heavily involved in the Ardra community. He has a lot of knowledge and experience of the fishing and the marine sector. He's spearheading that group with a committee there. And I know a couple of projects that got funded previously in Donegal, both on the big and on the small side. One of the bigger ones was the Wild Atlantic Glamping. And then there was a smaller one, Donegal Seafood Salt, which, you know, the funding helped with innovation and equipment. So that'll give you a kind of a scale of the kind of projects. But I'm excited about having met with the chairpersons of the local action groups. There are seven around the coast. And what they're saying to me is it's a great project. There's some great ideas coming forward. And the people involved kind of feel that we don't, as a state or as a department, highlight enough the good work that they're doing, the projects that they're supporting, and that perhaps if we can get a sort of a campaign of information behind it, in which I've spoken to officials about, and we will, that we'll even bring on more entrepreneurs and more social innovators to participate.
How important is it that whilst this is a national scheme and you know you're talking about it today from a government perspective, that the decisions are influenced locally? You know, there's that local local knowledge in most cases as to, you know, the successful projects.
Yeah, so from 25 to 29, we've about 15 million. The previous scheme was 12. So I think we expect it's kind of on a pro rata basis that Donegal will get somewhere north of about 2 million over that period of time. And the work is done, as I said, by the local committee under the guidance of Stephen McCahill as chair. And they'll be responsible for identifying the projects that are suitable, and we won't be certainly telling them what to do. Obviously, there are certain guidelines and criteria that have to be adhered to, but when it comes to identifying the priorities, that'll be very much for the local action group. Obviously, in consultation with Bordy Skiwara, who, as I said, carry out the sort of the detailed assessments and provide course, that yeah. administrative backup.
We need that oversight, of course. Now, whilst this is a coastal initiative, it's coastal communities, it's within 10 kilometres of the coast.
Yeah, and I mean, look, the vast majority of coastal communities, whether they be villages or towns or larger areas, are usually on the coastline, and it's there the activity is centred. You know, once you start moving inwards, you're into a different space. And what we're trying to do is to support that cluster of activity within the village or the town environment. And I think that makes sense. If we were to go further inland, I think we would dissipate the effort, and we would take from the sort of effort that we're trying to do, which is keep that coastal community around coastal activities, because everybody likes to be in a coastal community on the couple of fine weeks that we have during the year. And I was conscious, I was in Kilkee in my own county at the weekend, and there were people flocking from Limerick and Ennis and further afield to participate in the fine weather. But you know, when it gets to November and December, coastal communities are a very different space. So what we want to do is to try to create and have successfully done with the previous rounds, a vibrancy and a reason for people to live through the winter period and live, you know, have it as their base year round.
I mean, it's a simple enough program, and I have seen it in action too, and it does work, and it can be the difference between a project getting off the ground or not. People can apply at bim.ie or at least get more information. Has the applications opened yet, or is this a pre-warning that they're due to open shortly?
Yeah, well, last week was the launch of it, so it should be going live. If it's not already gone live, it should be going live very shortly.
Okay. Get on to bim.ie. Now, just one story locally, if you don't mind, Minister. A number of staff at a fish processing factory in Killybegs have lost 2 days' worth of wages after 750 tonnes of blue whiting turned to mush while being weighed at the pier. A local senator here, Manus Ball, stated that approximately 50 people were affected on Sunday, missing out on their double pay. The fish was intended for human consumption, but ultimately had to be used for fish meal instead. Senator Boyle, in his comments, emphasised that while the fishing community is not against monitoring, it is crucial that it's carried out correctly to prevent incidents like this from occurring. Obviously, this is regrettable. Is it a once-off, or do we need to make sure that the oversight is important but does not be so costly? I mean, obviously, it's the wages here, but there's an awful lot of blue whiting that could have ended up in the food chain now effectively being fish food.
Yeah, thanks very much, Greg. Yeah, Senator Manus was in touch with me over the weekend, as was Deputy Pat the Cope Gallagher. And they set out very clearly the concerns of the company involved. And I believe I have also had communications from the company involved about what transpired over the weekend. Now, in my position as minister, I'm precluded from, under legislation, from having any role in terms of the Sea Fisheries Protection Authority as to what they do and how they do their business. And obviously, I'm not going to in any way breach that legislative exclusion. But I have asked the department to provide me with an update as to what actually happened, what the parameters were, because of course, when a story like this gets highlighted and presented in isolation, it does give rise to concern. Mm.
But it is not the first time in Killybegs that the implementation of rules have been really quite costly. We have to make sure, don't we, that whilst you can't seem to be getting directly involved, I mean, at the end of the day, there has to be some oversight. The people responsible for implementing these rules and regs and how they do it can't be a law unto themselves either.
No, and I accept that. And I think but anyone that I've met since I've come into this role, from the fisherman's perspective, from the processor's perspective, or anybody who's generally involved in the industry, recognises the real importance of fishery protection, because nobody wants a situation to develop where there's overfishing, which will ultimately have a negative impact on their lives and livelihoods and have an impact on the state. And I know there's history in every aspect of life, but I get a sense that the industry has moved beyond that and has moved on, and that I'm really thankful for. But I do accept, and you know, I don't want in any way either to undermine the work of the Fishery Protection Authority, nor would I. But I think it will be helpful when the department have an opportunity to review the overall situation and provide me with some details in a general way about the risk-based approach that the Sea Fishery Protection Authority undertake, and also to look to the future and to see if there are ways in which we can meet our obligation, because we do have obligations as a state to our other fisheries partners around the world that we're implementing and protecting the law, and that has to be seen to be done. But I'd like to find a way in the future that it can be done that respects the lives and livelihoods of our own fishermen too, when they are.
It should be done. I think these things work best when it's seen to be done in cooperation with the industry.
I agree that, and you know, I don't want to overemphasize it. That may not always be possible either. But I think when there's a recognition that everything is above board, but it's a matter of establishing quantities, etc., that system can be implemented, and I'm not sure if the technology is involved, but that in a way that the fish don't get damaged. So I do need a full background as to the systems that are in place.
I think you might find it
just to understand better.
If I remember correctly, it's about whether the water is weighed as well. Which anyway, one final question.
Yeah, there's water weigh, and then there's the delicacy of the
product,
fish stock, yeah, and the process that they go through to weigh them or to count them or to whatever has an impact on the quality of the...
Exactly. So whatever system we employ, we should find a way that it doesn't damage the product.
I'm not an expert. I haven't seen this in play, but I do intend, as part of my commitment to travelling around to the various different locations, and I will be in Killybegs very shortly, and I do want to see this equipment in operation, this equipment working, so that I better understand that as I try to chart my way through this, that to look to the future to see if it's possible to find ways that meets everybody's needs and expectations here, protects our Sea Fisheries Authority and the work that they do, protects the fishermen who work really hard out there, and protects the processors.
One final question, Minister, if you don't mind. You talked about overfishing. Have you any concern coming into this portfolio about the large fish factories that we have effectively floating off our coasts? Are you any concerns about the policing of international fishing vessels, either inside or just outside our waters, in terms of what they're catching, what they're discarding, how we're policing that? Have you any concerns in that area? I know you're fresh into the portfolio.
Yeah, I'm learning my way as I work my way through, meet the various different organisations, and for sure, different representative bodies have raised concerns with me about the potential for overfishing by vessels from well outside the European Union. But I'm also conscious that there are agreements that have been reached in the past with various different bodies both within and outside of Europe that we have to be, whilst we mightn't like where we're at, mm-hmm. we've got to be cognizant of it. What I want to try to do is work with all sides here to see if we can do things a little bit differently into the future, to see if we can make the lives and livelihoods of people in these regions more bearable and more fruitful if possible. But it is a challenge. Fish stocks the world over are challenged because of more sophisticated methods of catching. And the migratory pattern of fish too is changing.
But we have to be careful, don't we? We have to be careful, don't we, that when we recognise that there is overfishing, that we don't penalise, you know, small indigenous fishermen. You know, and whilst our waters go relatively unpoliced, we don't know often what's happening out there.
No, I'm conscious of that. And I'm also conscious that, you know, species, the quality of species, the existence of certain species changes. It migrates in and out of certain waters. There are years where the stocks improve and disimprove. So it's... I suppose it's a moving target, to pardon the pun, and we've got to be agile and nimble, and we've got to be prepared to work with it. And
okay.
the people that I've met to date, including people from Killybegs, who I even met last weekend, who were when I attended the processors conference, and I hope to attend more of those conferences around the country. I was taken by their commitment to the future, commitment to their communities, commitment to their industry, notwithstanding the significant challenges that they have faced and are facing. So they're a resilient bunch of people, and I want to work with them. I want the industry to survive. I also am conscious and mindful of the necessity to protect fish stocks, and as are fishermen and processors, because if we overfish for a short period of time, that's not in their interest, and they know that, mm-hmm. and very clear on that to me. And I think we've got to work through the challenges.
Okay,
and
Minister.
There has been, and there will continue to be. But if we're all committed to the same vision, then we try and be on the journey together. There are times, I'm sure, that the industry won't be entirely happy with decisions that I'll have to take, but I'm hopeful that in the round we can work together and we can find a shared journey around a common goal, and that's to improve the lives and livelihoods.
Okay, Minister, we shall see. Listen, thank you very much for your time. We'll talk again, hopefully. Take care. That is Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Food and Marine with responsibility for fisheries, Tim Dooley. Our next guest on the show is the Mayor of Derry City and Strabane District Council, Lillian Sina Barr. Good morning to you, Lillian. Thank you for joining us. How are you keeping?
I am keeping well, thank you.
Good stuff. How is your mayorship going now? I mean, obviously at the beginning it got dragged left, right and centre with, I suppose, the geopolitical politics and everything else that's ongoing around the world. Have you been allowed to sort of settle in and get to grips with the job? I'm sure you have.
I think I have allowed myself to get the grip and get on with work that I put myself forward to do. So I've had an incredible year. It's been an amazing run. I've really enjoyed every bit of it, and I am still enjoying it very much so.
Very good. Now, you're using your position and your experience to call for the potential for a specialist university in Derry to be explored for young people with special needs. So why do you believe this necessary, Lillian?
I think, first of all, I need to mention the progress that has been made here in the Northwest. I recently visited the new Adnashi College, which was occupied on the 31st of March, a much needed inclusive educational setting for under 18. But we are in a critical point in, especially in how we support our young people with complex needs when they turn 18. And for many young families and those young people do not have structured support. It ends at 19. And what follows is a cliff edge that leaves those young people isolated without any opportunities. We have seen like the Caleb Cause campaign, which has shined a light on the real issues that those families and young people are facing here in Northern Ireland. The reality and the message of the campaign is our young people deserve better. And when they turn 19, there is a silence after that. So my motion was basically about ambition, it's about inclusivity, and it is about dignity, recognizing that that Caleb Cause campaign has shown us the lack of service provision for 19 years. That gap, it's a systemic failure, and we need to respond as leaders. And this is why my motion is focused on further education after 18 years of age.
It's very difficult to watch on as the supports that are there up until the age of 18 or 19, depending where you are, and you see the progression of a young person and them beginning to achieve their potential. And for that almost just to end and then to see a regression in people, you know, the positive gains dependent on the individual, the positive gains that are, have been made being lost. It's difficult to watch on, and it's kind of nonsensical as well that we should not have supports for late teens and young adults.
Absolutely. I think we need to recognize that these young people have ambition that just like every other person. They are facing unique challenges that we are creating barriers for them rather than removing those barriers and supporting them to move forward. I'm a mom of an autistic child, and my son teaches me more than I teach him. He learns very quickly to adapt in situations. But because we have allowed an environment where he can learn and adjust with little support and just reasonable adjustment, when we don't seem to do that, as soon as our young people get 19, we forget that they exist, and we forget that they are people with ambition that who wants to contribute into our economy. And we have seen in other places in the world that there is extended education for young people, even just in England here, but here we are not really taking seriously the contribution these young people can make into our economy and in our community, and they desperately need to do that. Well, I have interacted with a lot of parents the last 10 months. I have met those young people. You cannot meet any young people who are intelligent and hardworking, like young people with complex needs, because they want to show that they are capable of doing something, and they just need a little bit of help from us.
Yeah, your motion talked of a focus on therapeutic support, functional life skills, and independent living, practical stuff. Given those focuses, do you believe that, you know, current third level institutions could be adapted to accommodate, or do you believe this requires a specific type of third level, a type of education pathway for the young people with special needs we talk of?
I think my motion was incredibly timely, especially when we are looking towards ongoing expansion of Ulster University, for example, and the way Ulster University, the Northwest Regional College, and also in Letterkenny College, they're working very close together. This is an opportunity for us to start looking at the gaps that exist in service provision when it comes to education and further education for young people. Ulster University is currently undergoing a research on young people living with Down syndrome. There is no reason why that cannot be expanded to young people with autism, and look at how we can incorporate those services into their education system. If we are serious about inclusion, then higher education must be part of that conversation. And it's not just about building and a campus, it's really about creating those opportunities for every young person. And we have the ability to do that. We have the capacity, especially right now that we want 10,000 students to occupy our university here in McGee. There is no reason why we should not start looking at our medical school and expand that to ensure that services and educational needs of young people with complex needs is incorporated in that expansion.
Yeah, and often, although not in a sort of formal educational setting, often the supports for these people who are at that cliff edge come from the community, and they come from organisations that are scattered around the place, often run by people with children who are affected themselves, as if they didn't have enough to be at. It really is time, I think, especially, you know, given international law and stuff that we sign up for, that either, you know, the Northern Irish authorities or the authorities in the Republic of Ireland step up and provide these services? Do you know what I mean? Why should it be down to the amazing groups that we have? You know, this state, I believe the governments have a responsibility to these people.
Absolutely. And the government has failed these families big time. You know, families and individuals and volunteers are expected to provide services that government is supposed to provide. And for me, when I think about education, accredited courses, independent living, employability, creative arts, sports and life skills and digital skills, these are things that government is supposed to fund, not to just let volunteers or community groups come together to try and vent for themselves or try and solve a problem that exists within our structures. And it's simply systemic failure, and we really need to step up. And this is why my motion was asking a simple question. What are these? We know the problem. Where is this gap? And we actually know where the gaps are. It's now really real solutions, and we do have those solutions. These parents have already shown us a way by what they are doing in many groups. I chose a charity called Bud Club. That's my charity of the year. And when I go to see what they are doing there, it's incredible.
Are they struggling for funding? Do they have to fight every single year to gather up enough money to keep their services going? Because that's often what we see, and it shouldn't be that way. And also, The irony here is I don't believe we should have to convince governments in any country to do this, because the more you help people to contribute to society, financially contribute through work, there's a tax dividend there, or to be more independent and live more independently, the less burden there is on the state. So this really is not something from a financial perspective that should need to be argued, because it makes a great deal of sense. I know I'm on the same side of this conversation with you, but it's fine given what we're talking about. So this really is a no-brainer. It just requires a will, really. And I know you're focusing on the Northwest, and quite rightly so. But there should be national policies in relation to this, where stuff is rolled out across the board.
It's certainly been national, and the reason why I'm focusing in the Northwest, I think we are at a critical moment right now here in the Northwest. We have greater opportunities, and we can start by leading. The fact that we are expanding our Ulster University, the fact that the community is working really closely together with all statutory agencies, educational setups, and our local council, which is now taking the lead in these issues of inclusion. I think the whole region, as a Northwest region, we can serve over 350,000 people here in Derry. So it's a policy that needs to be expanded to be national, absolutely. But I think we need to start somewhere. And if we can have our local university expanded to meet the needs of these young people, then... Yep. That's a good start, exactly, and it can cover the whole region.
And if it needs to be called a pilot program, that's grand too. Whatever. Okay, thanks for your
time. They can call it whatever they want, as long as the service is there.
Mayor of Derry City and Strabane District Council, Lillian Barr, thanks so much for your time. Have a great day. Take care. Back after the break. Okay, right. Now, we were speaking yesterday extensively, the first hour of the show and beyond, about wildfire, gorse fires. And we just don't have at the moment the climate conditions whereby these things are happening accidentally. You know, there has to be an ignition source, and it's not a sheep, it's us. And, you know, there was a situation up Muckish at the weekend, which very much could have led to a similar situation as we saw in Barnesmore Gap and in Knockalla. Marie Duffy is a volunteer with Muckish Development Group and joins us on the show now. Hi, Marie.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Great to have you on the show. I mean, obviously, there's a littering issue here as well. But when I saw the picture, and it's quite shocking, and those watching can see it. I mean, we've got a barbecue literally sitting on a tinderbox. That's what it looks like to me, albeit on a rock. What did you see?
Yeah, so the Muckish Development Group have two members who would patrol the area regularly. And on Monday morning, they came across the barbecue that was left behind from the weekend. We had a beautiful weekend. The Muckish area was very busy. We have a railway line there now that people use to walk. So we have lots of people in the area. And we were very disappointed to see that someone had left behind a disposable barbecue. They obviously had lit it over the weekend while they were there. The ground conditions were very dry. The last thing we want is one person to destroy the area for everyone else. It's an area of scenic beauty. Everyone knows the Muckish area. It's absolutely beautiful. There's lots of animals, wildlife living in the area, deer, sheep, small animals, and a fire would have been catastrophic.
It beggars belief, really. There's no way you can have a barbecue up there. Firstly, if you do something like that at the beach, it's on sand, but you've access to water. No one's carting up, you know, 10 litres of water to put out the barbecue so they can carry it back down with them again. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they've got their Instagram moment, which is fine. And I don't want to over-amplify it here, but I'll tell you one thing. If a fire had started, they wouldn't be long clearing off, and we'd have 7, 8... fire units on site trying to tackle the blaze, the helicopter probably up again. So the consequences could have been incredibly severe. It's so irresponsible.
Yeah, it was really irresponsible. On a Monday morning, we'd be very used to picking up a lot of rubbish that's left over from the weekend, which is always disappointing to see. But a barbecue takes it to another level. The area is beautiful. There's picnic benches. There's areas where you can have picnics. But barbecues, when you're surrounded by heather and gorse and such beauty, is just it just beggars belief, really.
Right. So more generally speaking, obviously, hopefully this barbecue incident is an isolated incident. But I'm interested in the rubbish side of stuff, because people have gone up here because it's beautiful. And they've gone up, I presume, to admire the views and take their pics and everything. And that's fantastic. I can't believe people, I do believe it, but I can't believe people that would obviously have an appreciation for beauty would do anything to harm that by littering. But you're saying you do have to go up there and clean rubbish up. Like, what kind of stuff, what's going on up there?
Well, we've lifted everything from that area, from plastic bottles to dirty nappies. We've even, at the very beginning, before the railway line was open for walking, we've lifted fridges, we've lifted sofas, we've lifted everything. So the area is somewhere that people dump rubbish, which is very disappointing. I suppose the big thing is, with more traffic in the area and more people coming to visit the railway line, it's perfect for wheelchairs. It's wheelchair accessible. It's perfect for bikes, for kids. It's a safe area where they can go on their bikes without having to worry about getting knocked down or anything by traffic. And with more people in the area, we do see more rubbish. But that's not everybody. There's loads of people who take their rubbish home. There's just a small minority who are ruining it for everyone else.
Leave no trace. Okay, well, listen, it's just a reminder, take your rubbish home with you, but certainly don't be barbecuing, because when we talk about, it's criminality as well. If you start a fire, if you destroyed Muckish, the nesting birds, all the other wildlife, and the danger you put the responding services into, it's a no-brainer. Do not be taking barbecues to these areas. I don't think I'm being too preachy in that. Marie, you join me in that, won't you? I don't want to be the bad guy on my own.
I don't think so. There's loads of places around the county you can have barbecues very safely. And I suppose the other thing is, when you are out walking the railway line, just if you're smoking or anything like that, not to be throwing any cigarette butts along the line, because a fire can start so easily and it's preventable. And that's the main thing. We can prevent this from happening. So let's all do our part.
All right, Marie, thanks very much for your time. Marie Duffy, volunteer with the Muckish Development Group, and people out and about enjoying our beautiful scenery. This is a different type of one. And again, I'll try and describe the picture if you're not watching. Yesterday, says a listener, I took the kids for a forest walk at Coravaddy Woods. I was shocked to find trees still blocking the path since Storm A1. Who's responsible for the upkeep of this walk? We climbed over it, but if I had a pushchair, I'd had to turn back. And the tree is clearly, I'm looking at the image here, the tree is clearly obscuring It's blocking the walk anyway. So that's in Coravaddy Woods. Maybe someone's not aware of it. It's possible, right? I'm erring on the side of extreme caution here. Maybe someone doesn't know that this walk is blocked. So who's responsible for Coravaddy Woods, and can someone get up there with a chainsaw? A caller says, my pension lost 4K in value since last week, thanks to Donald Trump. Stock markets still affect plenty of us, even if we don't directly invest much in this country. Indeed, I think everybody's fully aware of the impact the stock markets have on people with pensions and people with stocks, okay? But what I was saying is the majority of people aren't, because all the coverage is effectively about how the stock markets are tumbling, and that, of course, does affect your pension. And I hope, and I'm sure, it's a long-term investment and you don't need to access that money soon. It will come back, right? But there's lots of people that aren't sort of directly infected by the big scary red downwards on, though eventually I suppose we all get affected. Right, let me see. Just to remind you that our big giveaway continues today. It's all very exciting, you know. We gave away €1,000 on the show yesterday to a Letterkenny listener. Aidan Murphy's in for John again today. Caroline, is that correct? Aidan Murphy is €1,000 to give away on Around the Northwest a little later on. It's not too late to buy your tickets, by the way, and there's still a load of great prizes. We've got €10,000 of... spend at Foy's, where they will work with you and help you reimagine your home, which would be lovely. €10,000 is a lot of money to spend at Foy's. We also have €10,000 in cash. You can do with that what you wish. You can spend it on your home or do whatever you want to. So it's €10,000 to spend with Foy's, €10,000 to spend how you like. And we've got €4,000 to give away Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So you can be in all five draws by going onto our website, highlandradio.com, and click Win a Home Makeover. Tickets are €15, 5 for €10. Obviously, only buy them if you can afford them and have a bit of fun with that. If you want to make sure you're in that draw today and for the rest of the week, and then the big one on the April 16th, please give us a call now on 07491 25000, and we can make sure that you're in that draw. If you've bought your tickets already, whether you bought the first ticket or the last ticket, you're in every draw. I'm just letting people know who may not have entered that they can get involved too.